I know it's Friday. I know it's the second day of the conference. And I know it's a plain, boring topic. So either I have to ask you, why are you here? Or I have to ask you, please show me some love. Okay, so it's, come on, it's a software conference. You're not at work. Your boss is not watching you. Well, it's taped, but it's not watching you now. You're not at home. Your wife is not watching you. Okay, so you can now be the person you actually are. Okay, so let the beast out of you. Let's have some fun for the next 75 minutes with a topic that is quite interesting, which is still quite new, and which still needs to, well, to settle down in the industry, and which still needs to be tackled by a lot of clients and customers in order to really grok the idea of the cloud and the whole platform. So in order for this here to work between you and me, you need to fill the room with vibrations, okay? And vibrations can be filled if you at least pretend to be enthusiastic. You know, it's a Microsoft conference. Just say, wah! Okay, or good morning, or hello, or whatever. So let's try that again. Because otherwise, this will not work. Good morning, everybody. Hi. Hi. Wow. Full room of audience. Wow. So I'm very happy to be here again in the Netherlands at, Dev Days powered by Tech Days, I was told so. Just yesterday, I was in Belgium at Tech Days, doing also two sessions, just as here. One session about real world elasticity from on-premise to cloud and back. And the second session will be this early afternoon about the Windows platform app fabric service bus. Okay? So if you are interested, I guess today is a real cloud day. So there are two sessions about real world. One is done by me, and the other one is done by Wade Wagner from the US DBE team from Redmond. There are two sessions about the service bus. One is by me, and the other one is by Clemens Fasters, which is the technical lead. So I think that you will get two different points of view of the platform and of the tools and of the services. One from the teams and from the DPE and the evangelisms from Redmond, and the other one from a guy who has been doing real projects based on the Windows platform, okay? And why is this guy actually saying all the time? Well, it turns out that Windows is somehow difficult to pronounce. You still remember the days of Windows Vista? Well, we don't want to remember, but we still remember. They chose that name because it's being pronounced in the world everywhere the same. Vista, 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 Vista. It's different, right? I have been listening to something like, with a French accent, Windows Azure. I have been, if I talk to my friend Vittorio, Windows Azzurro. Or we in Germany, Windows Azure. Or in the UK, they say Windows Azure. So how is it actually pronounced? And this is not a joke now. This is an official WAV file from Redmond, which was sent around, actually after PDC 2008 already. So let's try to give this session a title now. So welcome to the session, Real World
Azure.
Real world
Azure.
Real world
Azure.
Real world
Azure.
So it's Azure. Okay, so now everybody in the room, real world. You're not playing my game. So again, real world
Azure.
Again, real world
Azure.
Great, so that's it. Now you know in which session you are. So this is about talking about experiences and hopefully a pragmatic view on what is possible today with the Windows Azure platform, with various services inside of the Windows Azure platform. And we will be talking about not something that I want to call real world, so let's rather call it Windows Azure by example, Right? I try to give you an example and talking about development and deployment. We will talk about databases. We will talk about deployment again. We will talk about deployment again. And we will talk about easier deployment. And we will talk about monitoring and all these stuff. So things that we have learned from the past 1.5 years where we have been applying, well, Windows Azure and Windows Azure Platform services in various client and customer projects. So one last thing, how cool can it be that we are here in a room about the Windows Azure platform and this room is called Amazon? Did you realize that? It's room Amazon. So this must be a very interesting session. So let's talk about Windows Azure in Amazon today. Okay? My name is Christian Weyer. I'm from a very, very, very small company called ThinkTecture. We are based in Germany. One of my colleagues and co-founders, Ingo Rama, is also here. He's also doing a session. What we have been doing in the past 10-plus years, so for me personally, it's something like 14 years, it's designing, building, architecting software in a distributed fashion. That means designing distributed application systems with various approaches on various platforms, with various technologies based on different patterns. But usually we focus on everything Windows Server, everything .NET Platform. And my special area of expertise has always been the idea and the concept and the mantra, as I call it, of services and service orientation, but not the blah, blah, blah level of services, but the technical level of services, how to design them, how to optimize them, how to implement them with technologies like the Windows Communication Foundation or with technologies like the Windows Workflow Foundation and similar things. And if you are into services and into service orientation, the next logical step for me is going into the cloud. Because if you think services, if you live services, if everything around your software architecture and your software systems is about services, then going into the cloud is a very easy and logical next step. Because then you can decide which parts of the application or the application architecture can be, should be, is able to be moved into the cloud. If you don't think services-wise, and again, service thinking has nothing to do with WCF or any technology. It's a way of breathing software architecture, okay? Of course, yeah, you can implement it with WCF, but that's just one way. If you want to implement it with a pigeon, it's okay. Just tag a message to the foot of a pigeon and send the pigeon away. Service orientation at its best. Huh? So if you live and breathe services, then the cloud will be a very logical thing for you. If you don't, so if you have some, let's call it monolithic application systems, and you want to move those into the cloud because your boss told you so, hey, that's that cool stuff, huh? Cloud, we need to go in there, put our ERP system from 1989 into the cloud. Then you may have a problem. So for us, we have been following the Windows Azure platform and Windows Azure itself for years now, even when it was codenamed Red Dog. So Red Dog, from time to time you see the initials RD. For example, when you log in to a cloud machine that you have deployed, the cloud machines are named RD and then a random number. And RD stands for Red Dog. So we have been dealing with that for a long time. And actually, what we have been doing is several real projects, so there are systems out there that run on Windows Azure that we have been helping to design and to build, and also a number of proof of concepts. So based on that first experience, let's call it like that, we're going to take a look at what's possible today and what not. So the most important thing is my email address. If you have questions regarding this session, regarding my other session, regarding any other architectural topic or whatever you can imagine, feel free to send me an email. I will be happy to answer it when I'm back from this trip. And just feel free to send any questions you have, and we will sort it out. Great. So we'll take a short trip through Windows Azure. I didn't want to call it real world, and I didn't want to call it something like best practices. So I did call it real world, okay? But what do I mean by real world? Well, by real world, I mean it's not made up in a lab or a laboratory and cooking up some ideas which sound cool, but this is actually something we have learned and we are actually using out there in the wild in the real cloud, okay? So I didn't want to call it best practices. Why? Can you imagine why? What is a best practice? Experience based on what? I think, yeah, but I think best practice can only be applied in context, in the context of your project, in the context of your product, in the context of your requirements, in the context of the skill set of your team, in the context, you know? So I think best practices is a very broad term. And if I go on stage and say, hey, if these are the best practices of Windows Azure, I'm just lying because I cannot fulfill any of you here, right? I cannot satisfy what you think about best practices because it really depends. Whereas I know it's the consultant's answer. Oh, I'm sorry, it depends, and this is my daily rate. But honestly, it really depends on what you are trying to do. Are you trying to host an application in Windows Azure? Are you just trying to put data into Azure storage? Are you trying to use Azure with a service bus to communicate and connect local services and local systems? What are you trying to achieve? So this is the reason why I did not call it real world, but I called it just Windows Azure by example. So we will take a quick journey through a bunch of things and a bunch of ideas, what we can do with Windows Azure and what we cannot or should not do with Windows Azure and related services and related features. So who is in this session because his boss told him so? Okay, who is the boss? Okay, one-man shop. Yes, good guy. So this is something that we have seen a lot and also experienced in person in discussions with CXO level guys. That, oh, now everything is so much easier because it has grown so complex and we really don't understand our processes. We need something, some magic, like whoosh, that just takes away all the complexity. And of course, today, the answer is, let's put it into the cloud. But I suppose it's not that easy. I suppose it's not going to be that super simple. You know, to me it occurs, today everybody is calling cloud what 5 years ago everybody was calling SOA. Right? 5 years ago, oh, the solution to your process and integration problem is service-oriented architecture. And I always find it funny to talk about SOA in the Netherlands. I love that. Okay? And you know why? It is really a disease, SOA. If you talk to various people, you need to spend maybe hours in order to dissect what they actually mean by SOA. I mean SOA as in service-oriented architecture, not the other one, okay? So SOA is really, really a hot topic, but this hot topic is even, well, not as hot as this topic here, so cloud. Whether you are using the Amazon cloud, so the EC2-based cloud, whether you are using Google's App Engine-based cloud, or whether you are using the Windows and Azure cloud, it doesn't matter. They have different levels of abstraction. They work in a different way. I totally agreed. We will come to that in just a few seconds. But at the end, you really need to understand the cloud. You really need to see the value, and you really need to understand which services are offered and how you can use them. So here now in this session, we are talking about in the cloud. So running applications in the cloud, having data in the cloud, working with those stuff in the cloud. In my session in early afternoon, I'm talking about with and through the cloud. That's a totally different aspect. This is the aspect of the hybrid cloud, where I can marry the local environments with the cloud environments, and cloud environments with other cloud environments, and local environments with other local environments. Okay? So we really need to understand and grok what the cloud is all about. And this also means we need to understand, for example, things like, oh, there is more than just putting an application up there. Okay? So we will see that there are a bunch of things that will be maybe not as obvious as you may think in the first place, and hopefully the ideas and the things presented here will help you a little bit. So first thing, a number of people still think that Windows Azure is just hosting. No. So Windows Azure is not something like Amazon's EC2. Okay, so who's using Amazon EC2? Not a lot. So EC2 is infrastructure as a service. You care about the virtual machine. You care about the hardware. Well, the hardware is abstracted, but you care about the physics. You care about the network load balancing. You care about the operating system. App Engine, so Google App Engine, and especially Windows Azure are a completely different abstraction from that. They are platform as a service, which means I don't care about the VM. I don't care about the operating system details. I don't care about blah, 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 blah. What do we care as software developers and software architects about? About the application. So that's the idea of platform as a service. We focus on the application and we are running applications in the cloud and not servers. That's something to put into our head. We are not running servers, we are running applications. Ooh, cool. So that's what we need, and that's what we know, and that's what we love. Applications, we are building great software. Now we need an abstraction in order to be able to more or less ignore that infrastructure aspect. And this is what Windows Azure gives us. And we will just take a look at it in a few moments when we see how Windows Azure is trying to achieve this. Okay, great. Another very, very important thing is, and I'm sorry to bother you with this in the early morning, you need to know about costs. That's what I call COA, cost-oriented architecture. You know, you cannot go into the cloud or put applications to run in the cloud and not know the pricing model and not know the implications of what happens when. Because at the end, everything has a cost factor. And that's one interesting discussion as well. A lot of the good guys that think that cloud computing is cool always bring the argument, hey, now you know what your application does cost you per month. You know what your CRM application or your ERP application in the cloud will cost. The funny thing is, I still need to come across one single client who knows today what an application costs when they host it themselves. There are not a lot of clients and customers out there who know their costs. So it's quite difficult to convince them, hey, cool, the cloud, huh? You can save costs. Okay, how? I don't know what my application costs today. So yes, you can save costs, but only if you are able to compare. And if, in order to be able to compare, you need to know your current costs, and of course you need to know the cost and the pricing model of the cloud. Cost-oriented architecture. So the software architect needs to be a little bit of a controller, of a financial controller, if you like it or not. Windows Azure is more than just the sum of its pieces, and you know, that sounds like marketing FUD, but to be honest, I'm not a marketing FUD guy, so I'm telling you the truth here. There are a lot of cloud platforms out there, yes. When we talk about cloud computing version 1, so it's still early days, agreed? When we talk about cloud computing version 1, then Windows Azure itself is maybe something like version 0.8, maybe 0.9, to be very, very honest. But The whole idea, the whole vision of the entire Azure platform is something that is not out there at any other vendor. So the idea of having compute instances, storage, a relational database, and developer and runtime infrastructure services, just like a messaging and service bus, just like an access control service in the cloud, just like a caching service, which was released tonight, by the way. This is just a holistic view of everything that we can do in the cloud and with the cloud. And this is a very, very, very cool and tempting approach in my eyes. And yes, it's early, huh? It's early. And if you need to know a little bit more about, especially the service bus in the Windows Azure App Fabric, I invite you to come to my session this afternoon. So, when should I actually go to the cloud? You know my answer? It depends. But honestly, when you want to focus on application development, when you want to focus on the stuff that you know, when you don't want to invest into hardware, when you don't want to invest into all these infrastructure things like, I don't know, switches, routers, load balancers, the configuration behind it, you get it, right? Then the cloud is a very tempting idea, but not everybody will go to the cloud. Not every application will go to the cloud. Not everybody will need the cloud. This is just not true, right? Of course, we will have several use cases where we may leverage the cloud, but the cloud will not be an all or nothing thing. This is not going to happen, okay? So if we talk about the cloud and Windows Azure as one example of a cloud system and a cloud platform, of course, there are some scenarios that make a lot of sense. And then there are some problems. What are the biggest problems with cloud computing? Okay, so he says security. Security is very broad. It's something like it depends, right? So, of course, yes, security. What I want to refine is data, data sovereignty. Who owns the data? What about encrypting data, securing data, stuff like that. Other aspects of security are very well covered in today's cloud platforms, like authentication, like authorization, like personalization, like end-to-end security. That's all fine and possible. The important aspect is more like a non-technical one, like, okay, my data, am I allowed or should I really put my data into the cloud? Right? And if you are not able to put your data into the cloud, you still may be able to put your application into the cloud, but keep the data on-premise. Oh, by the way, on-premise is the new word for local, and cloud is the new word for the internet, just in case you missed that, okay? So this is also an option that we have, putting applications up there, keeping data here. But one very special scenario for Windows Azure, which works quite well, which we have implemented for a couple of clients, is bursting and predictable bursting. Predictable bursting means you know the peaks, the high and the low peaks before they happen. And then with the hosting model, the service model, as it's called, of Windows Azure, with the remote controllability of Windows Azure, it's just very, very nice to scale your application up and to scale it again down. So when I talk about elasticity, I do not only mean the elasticity in the cloud, but also coming from local to the cloud, sitting in the cloud, leveraging the elastic factors and features of the cloud, and maybe, if it makes sense, moving back from the cloud to local and to on-premise. But that's usually not as easy as one may expect or may hope. So this is a typical scenario, but of course you can use Windows Azure in a lot of other ones. Let's take a look at the small sample application. So this sample application is the MVC Music Store. Who knows that application? Okay, now you know. So it's a ASP.NET MVC 3 application which is just used to illustrate some aspects of ASP.NET MVC and repository pattern and entity framework and yada, 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 okay? Not of any interest for us, those implementation details. The idea was to use this MVC music store application and put it into the cloud. So let's first take a look at the application itself. As said, it's a very simple ASP.NET MVC application, which is now running in the local development web server and using a local SQL Server database. So we can just click around and go into albums and look at that. We can put them into the cart. We can click around. We can look at the cart. Just a very simple, I don't know, e-commerce style application, okay? The fact that we do not have real album art is because of copyright issues, so there is always the standard image, but nothing to worry about. So the idea was taking this application and moving it into the cloud. So it's, as you can see, a standard ASP.NET controller-based application using a local database, a local MVC music store database, which is buried in SQL Server Express on my machine. Let's quickly go there, databases, MVC music store, and there are just a bunch of tables. These are the actual tables. The other tables with data sync are tables that I will talk about later when it comes for synchronizing data between the cloud and my local application, because that's a very important feature that a lot of people want and need. Okay, so taking this application means I can host it in IIS. Actually, I did on that machine, so that's IIS 7.5. It's running in SQL Server 2008, in my case, R2, and it's completely unaware of anything cloud. Okay? It's just an ASP.NET application. But it has one feature already implemented that is very, very, very essential in the cloud. And now here come my three big points that you need to know about and you need to adhere to if you want to have success in the cloud. And I'm happy to discuss these after the session. So the first success factor is services and service orientation. Put that into your brain. Services, modeling them with an interface and a contract, sending data in, getting data out. Services. Okay. The second one is costs. We already heard about that. You need to know the cost model. You need to know the implication. What happens if an attacker comes and does a denial of service attack? How could that actually influence your application and your pricing, for example? Just one simple example, okay? And number three, statelessness. What a cool word. Statelessness. But statelessness doesn't exist, right? Because what are we building software for? Well, okay, for human beings. But let's get them out of the picture. They are not important to us. So what are we building software for? For data, for handling data, for managing data, for manipulating data, right? And data is the state of our software. So something like statelessness doesn't really exist. What we mean with stateless application means that we are not pinning data state to a certain instance, to a certain memory instance, and we rely that we always go to that very same instance, okay? In the cloud, if you want or not, from the very beginning, even if you are doing development on the local machine, you have a load balancer in place. There is always a load balancer. Okay, if you have one instance, it doesn't make a lot of difference for you. But if you start to have two instances of your Windows Azure system, and you surely need to have two, I will explain that now. If you have two instances, you are automatically load balanced, currently in a round-robin fashion and manner, right? So if you are using state as something like private static, my super-duper private state back, do something, add, And then the next request comes in and whoops, oh, other instance. So you need to design your application in a stateless way, and this application is designed in a stateless way. Okay? Make sense? Great. So the idea is, let's Azureize this. Let's try to put this thing into Azure. So the first thing is, we need to set up the development environment. And if we need to set up the development environment, what we usually do is we fire up Visual Studio. Of course, I already did that for you. And we create a new cloud project. Cloud, let's call it, I don't know, Music Den Haag. Okay, so now in various presentations, articles, and books you see, choose one of these from the left side. We don't need it, okay? Because we already have our application, so we just hit OK here. So now we get an empty project. Look at that project. This is the most important file of Windows Azure. It looks impressive, right? Look at its pure beauty. It's empty. But this is the heart of the ideas of Windows Azure. This is the contract, so to say, between you as a software developer and a software architect and a system designer and the cloud. Because in the cloud, there is a guy called the Windows Azure Fabric Controller. And this Fabric Controller is the master of disaster of everything. It's the master of disaster of your deployments. It's the master of disaster of your upgrades and updates. It's the master of disaster of actually keeping your instances alive. He is the guy in the cloud up there. Okay? And by defining what we want from Windows Azure, we just put this definition into a package, put that package up into the cloud, and the Azure Fabric Controller just does it for us. Okay? So that's the basic idea. That's the important part. In order to fill some life into this file, we now add how do we do it? Let's do it in the following, like the following. Ctemp music store. Exactly. So let's add an existing project. Let's take music store in here. So that's our music store as we know it. And now we say, okay, now we want to add a role to that cloud project. So roles are the abstraction that Azure uses. So there are, I usually say two kinds. There are three kinds, but I am trying to ignore the third one. So there are three roles. The one is web role, the other one is worker role, and the third one is VM role. Let's ignore VM role for now. If you want to know why, catch me outside of the room. So, web and worker role. What we want is we want to have full IIS. We want to have a web application running up there, and we want to be able to use that idea of platform as a service just with my web application. Okay, so what we can do is add web role project in solution. And he recognizes that I have an ASP.NET application in there, and he puts a reference now to that MVC music store application, and whoops, our service definition is now filled with life. Filled with life means what we have set up is an input endpoint. Whoops. Wow. It's an input endpoint. That input endpoint means this is an endpoint on the load balancer on the data center edge. Okay? And that input endpoint is always load balanced. So that means now we have an input endpoint which allows HTTP on port 80, and this one we use in a website. And you can already smell it. The definition of the website is something that gets mapped into IIS. And the rest is used by the Windows Azure Fabric Controller up there in order to program the network environment. Boom, done. That's the idea behind it. So the service definition is horribly, horribly important. But it always goes hand in hand with another one. This is the service configuration. Now, so in the service configuration, what we need is to take a look at two OS-related properties. So OS family one means Windows Server 2008 based. OS family two means Windows Server 2008 R2 based. And here comes. What is the big difference between the two? IIS. So the one has IIS 7.0, the other one has IIS 7.5. And if you want to have the full features of IIS 7.5, you should immediately switch to OS family 2 here. Okay? The other one, the OS version, just says, hey, I'm using this cool feature of Azure to automatically update myself to the next OS version or the next patch level. And now I come back to what I said just a few minutes ago. Do you remember what I said about the instances? If you have one instance, you are also behind the load balancer, but you actually need at least two instances. The service level agreement from Microsoft says we are guaranteeing 99.95% of availability if you're running at least two instances. Because then they have something like update domains or upgrade domains and fault domains. And upgrade domains come into play when we are about to update the OS version to the next patch level. They take down one in one upgrade domain, patch that, update that, bring it back, and take down the other one. And as this is all handled by the fabric controller up there and the load balancer, we should be fine and running all the time. So, if we think about costs again, what does that mean? All those calculations that you see in presentations and in articles usually calculate based on one instance. Multiply that, please, at least by two, because otherwise you are not covered by the service level agreement. Okay? Just for you to know. Great. A very important thing is a lot of shit can happen in the cloud. And if it happens, it happens really, really hard. So what I usually do is, in the sense of whatever I do in startup code, so I have another project which I have prepared, of course, as it's a good way in all good cooking shows, right? So we are cooking our Azure menu now. I have prepared an application that's already completely migrated. And in there, I'm doing something in the startup phase, okay? And what I usually do is I really catch any exceptions that may happen there. Because if exceptions, unhandled ones, happen there, you are completely lost. You get that role recycling sign in the Windows Azure Management Portal all the time. And you say, oh, what the fuck is going on? Huh? So you really should try and catch everything. And this diagnostics helper is a very, very simple one. Look at that. What it does is each and every exception that happens, it catches it and puts it immediately to blob storage. I have seen people using diagnostics here. So Windows Azure has a diagnostics feature, but the diagnostics monitor may already be gone, or there may be a problem talking to it, or I don't know. The most reliable way that we have found is actually using the cloud storage directly to push it into blob storage. And of course, don't forget to do a try catch here as well, because that can also blow up. And the last resort that I usually do is I write something to the event log. What does that mean, event log? How do you actually write to an event log, or how do you prepare for an event log? Enter the idea of startup tasks. So startup tasks are something that you can inject into the startup phase of your role. So when you deploy your role, it's being, well, build the VM, and then it's being started and configured, and then your role starts. And when your role is starting, you can actually plug into this startup mechanism with startup tasks. So that means whenever a new instance of your role is starting, for example, if you scale out, or for example, if a failure has happened and the fabric controller, the master of disaster, is just giving us a new instance. So every time a role is starting, an instance is starting up, these are executed. So what I do here is very, very simple. I spawn PowerShell, and the PowerShell script is horribly complex. New event log, I create a new event log, and I create a new event log source, done. But this is only possible because of a single reason. This is the code that is running elevated in Azure. Any other code, if you don't want to, is not running elevated. It's a standard user. Actually, it's not even a user, it's just an SID up there. If you go into, well, you cannot go into a blank and empty VM, but if we could look at a blank and empty VM in the cloud, there would be no interactive user. Administrator is disabled, guest is disabled, any other users are just SIDs. If we configure remote desktop, well, then of course I have a user, an interactive user, which I can use in order to talk to my instance and in order to look at my instance, in order to monitor my instance for troubleshooting issues. So getting into Windows Azure seems quite easy in the first place, right? Setting it up in Visual Studio, taking a look at the service definition, at the service configuration, make sure that you have secured everything that could go wrong. Because there is one annoying thing currently in Windows Azure, and this is deployment time. So who is already using Windows Azure in production? I guess not. Oh, wow. So how many minutes does it? 16? That's a good one. That's a better one. So yeah, my experience is something between 17 and 19 in average. I have seen 9 minutes. I have seen 29 minutes. Okay? So if you, as a developer, well, it could be a nice job. It could be a nice day in your job, right? If you have on your goal sheet, deploy an application 10 times to Windows Azure, your day is done, right? But if it is something like, please integrate Windows Azure development and deployment into our software development lifecycle, then this may be a problematic approach. Okay, I will show you later on how we can make this a little bit easier. Okay. So, and because those startup times are so high and it's taking so long, we should really make sure that we are able to lock everything. Deployment. So what we usually do is we deploy to a data center. So a data center can be chosen in the portal. Let's create a new hosted service. And here we can choose the data center. Okay? By the way, everything, almost everything that you can do through the portal, you can do through the service management API, a REST-based API. And you now can even create hosted services. So you can automate everything. Everything. You don't have to do clickety-clickety, raggedy-droppy, colorful, blah, blah, blah. You can automate everything. So here in Europe, we usually use West Europe or North Europe, and here is a small story. What is North and what is West Europe? So North Europe is Dublin, West Europe is Amsterdam. Well, it's US guys, huh? They don't care about Europe. So West Europe is Amsterdam, exactly. Which makes sense, of course. So at the end, we end up in a data center. What we need to do is, we need to deploy into a data center, and in order to not fall into the trap that happened to a lot of startup companies last week, what happened? Everybody's blaming Amazon for this downtime thing that happened to a lot of customers, but actually, I would rather blame the users and the customers running on the cloud and in the cloud because they don't understand the cloud. So what I usually recommend is, and yes, this also puts your costs a little bit higher, to deploy into different locations, into different data centers. And there is a new feature in Windows Azure coming, and this is something I really, really, really love, and it's called the Traffic Manager. So what we can do here is what we can do here is something like create, and here we can now choose a method that the traffic manager uses in order to route our traffic to the correct data center. So we can deploy to different data centers. So for example, your base customers are in West Europe, which is Amsterdam, I guess. So other customers may sit in Asia, and yet others may sit in the US. So you are deploying to all those three data centers, at least two instances of each role. You get it? So instance by two by three, okay, for the three data centers. And then you can choose whether it should use performance, so that means the best performance IP route to the data center, or a failover one. If you use the failover one, it just tries to get the instance from the data center that is highest in the list. If it fails, because maybe the data center is down or just a part of the data center is down, it just tries the next one. So this is actually a high availability optimization DNS-based system. And this is really, really kicking ass. And it's really already in the CTP, really working well. And this is something that a lot of people have been waiting for, to have something in front of the actual data center based and integrated with a DNS system in order to route our traffic based on different policies. And I really like that. Okay. So, one very important piece for troubleshooting is remote desktop. So, remote desktop, let's go back to our, for example, of course, I already deployed Music Store to the cloud, right? In order to show it to you. So, that's MVC Music Store Cloud App.net, okay? I can RDP into it just by clicking on the instance, whoops, here, and then up there I have connect, and then I can RDP remote desktop into the instance. I'm not going to show this to you because I guess everybody has seen RDP in action. The point that I want to bring home is this is for troubleshooting. It's not for you to mount any image or any setup.exe and double-click it in the cloud and be happy, oh, now I have finally my application running in the cloud. No. It's about troubleshooting. Usually, keep off your fingers from RDP access. If shit is happening, go in there with RDP. That's all I want to say. The next very important point is, what do you guys see? What could be a problem with this URL? So you're talking about visibility? Yeah, I think I can feel where you are going. So the problem is each and every application I put into Windows Azure has .cloudapp.net as the root domain. So what this means is that you cannot get an SSL certificate for cloudapp.net, right? What this means is, if you are using cookies and you are using the cookies based on this domain, cookie sharing is easily possible, which you maybe do not want. Okay, so what we really need to do is we need to map this into our own DNS. I don't want to see these URLs into the wild, like on business cards. Oh, by the way, our application is on Azure. Look, cloudad.net. Oh, fail, epic fail. So what I usually do is I spin up the management interface of my DNS host service, and I just create an alias, okay? So, for example, there is mvcmusicstore-north, which goes to musicstore.thinkazure.net. So here we are doing the DNS mapping, and I will do another DNS mapping at the end of the session when I'm showing a lightweight deployment mechanism in order to really deploy it to the cloud. Okay, talking about deployment, you know what? Let's just try and deploy this application here. Let's see whether it ends until the session ends. So let's put that into Tech Days production. Let's put it into the blob storage, and let's just say go. So this is the prototypical deployment story that you have seen probably, or that you will see all the time when somebody talks about Azure. Yes, it's nice that you can do it from inside of Visual Studio, but usually you want to automate it, right? And automating it, for example, can be done. Let's go here. Can be done either with PowerShell or with plain batch files. There are tools in the Windows Azure SDK which allows you to package your applications. There are tools which allow you to actually run it. And there are, I don't know, open source, third-party, community-driven tools which allow you, for example, to put or to upload that package into blob storage. Okay? So you can completely automate this. And at the end, you just have to call something like create deployment, give it a name, and specify the target hosted service, and then something like 16 to 22 minutes later, you're up and running in the cloud without having to bother about any infrastructural stuff. Because this is done by the Fabric controller again. Okay, so this deployment should be running. Yeah, it has been uploaded, and now the time counts. So it's 10:07. Let's see how well it goes. Windows Azure Storage. Windows Azure Storage. That's a topic completely on its own. There are three storage services. One is queues. Yeah, well, is that really storage? Well, it's for decoupling in an asynchronous way communication between roles and role instances. Okay? So I can put data in there and can get data out there. So the most important thing to remember in the cloud, nearly everything in the cloud is, and Glenn will love that, is based on HTTP, right? All those interfaces into all cloud services are REST-based APIs. So that means the access to the queuing service is REST-based, which means in order to get data from the queue, what do we need to do? Huh? Pulling the queue. Okay? Coming back to cost-oriented architecture, CoA, you remember? If you have worker roles, pulling a queue each and every half second, and you have 20 instances of this worker role, do the math. This is going to be exploding your costs. This is going to be horribly expensive. So you need to think about the architecture again when you are using things like polling and regular talking to the storage services. So The question was whether for these kinds of scenarios and use cases, another approach like WebSockets may be more feasible. I'm not sure whether, because WebSockets at the end of the day is yet another point-to-point mechanism, right? Yeah, it's not polling, but it's point-to-point, right? You have to establish the socket to that very instance. And with queues, you can do a fan-out kind of thing. So I think, yes, certain use cases can be solved in a better way with WebSockets, but the actual idea behind queues, and that's what Clemens is talking about in his session about the new queue feature in the Service Bus version 2, I guess... yes, yeah. Yeah, I agree on that one. Cool. So they are all HTTP-based, which means, well, we need to call them. So the other two are table storage, which is a NoSQL schema-less approach to storing data, and the other one is blob storage. And blob storage, people laugh. Blob storage is just so simple, huh? Blob storage is like my data and file bucket in the cloud, okay? What I usually do with blob storage is I use blob storage for storing the binary data that I need to scale out with my application. So in the case of the MVC Music Store, it would be the album arts, the album art images, okay? And what I will be showing at the end is using blob storage together with a web worker role pattern in order to enable an easier deployment mechanism. When we talk about storage, usually I talk about tools. So one of the most prominent Windows Azure storage tools out there is Cloud Storage Studio. Yes, it costs money, but it's really worth it. It's from a company called Cerebrata, and what I can do here, I can just connect to any of my storage accounts, and then I have a view of my tables, I have a view of my queues, and I have a view of all my containers for the blob storage, okay? And then, of course, I can drill in there and get all the data that's in, that's not really helpful for you, because this is a table where all the event logs from my Azure instances are collected. But there is also a very nice tool which I use regularly, and this is just this one. Windows Explorer? Look at that. I double click here, and after some hours, few seconds, I have now the view of my storage accounts. And I just click in here, and now I have the exact same container view as I had with the Cloud Storage Studio, but now integrated as a Windows Explorer shell extension. And this is freaking awesome, right? So now I can deploy and copy stuff to the cloud, Control-C, Control-V, and that's it. I will show this to you together with this deployment thing. SQL Azure, huh? Turns out this is the service that a lot of people love the most. Why? Oh, well, it's nothing new. They think it's nothing new. It's a relational database. It's SQL Server. It's SQL Server based. It's not a database server as we know it. It's a database service with all the ideas of the cloud behind it. So if we use SQL Azure, and I did that for the MVC Music Store, what we need to do is we need to create a server first. Well, and that's the funny thing, they call it server, but it's actually a service, okay? So once you have created a server, you can create a database inside of the server. So database and server creation happens in the management portal. Then all your database objects like tables and views and stored procedures happens through SQL Server Management Studio, okay? So let's try to connect to SQL Server Management Studio through SQL Server Management Studio. This is my database instance. Let's grab my password. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Whack. And this is a dialogue I could talk about hours. This is something that people just need to understand and accept, that SQL Azure is not really meant for scenarios that we call code far. Code far means that it is not in the cloud, not in the data center, which maybe has a dynamic IP. Because SQL Azure by default has a completely shut down, well, or up firewall, which is completely not allowing any connections into it. So we need to specify the IP or IP address range in order to talk to SQL Azure, right? So if we go here, no, sorry. If we go here and firewall rules, we could now add a new firewall rule for me to get access to this application. But this doesn't make sense if you are going into code far. Code far means I have a lot of people thinking about, oh, we have this old access application, and we have a bunch of VB6 code lying around. Let's move the database into the cloud, and we have a distributed mobile application. No. Because first, code far means code far. I mean, how much further it could be than in the cloud. So there is something that just is not working correctly through the internet. And this is how SQL Server protocols work. So it's TDS over TCP over SSL. And this is a protocol that was not really made for the internet times. Okay? So if we go a long way from the client application to the SQL Server, to the SQL Azure instance, a lot of errors may occur. And I tell you what, you need to catch these errors. There is a fantastic article about best practices for handling transient conditions in SQL Azure client applications. And you need to apply these, and here they are best practices. You need to apply these best practices because a lot of error conditions will occur that won't occur or that even do not exist in your local on-premise SQL Server environment. Okay? So that means if you're doing data access code and you just want to, because that's something that Microsoft tries to sell us from time to time, right? Just switch the connection string and it's all working. Yeah. 80% it might work, 20% it won't. Because of the completely different behavior of SQL Azure compared to, well, SQL Server. So if you have put all your data up there, what you may want to do is synchronize data. So we can synchronize data. Where is it? Here. There is a CTP called SQL Azure Data Sync. It's a community technology preview. And here we can synchronize on-premise database with on-premise database, on-premise database with SQL Azure, and SQL Azure with on-premise database, and SQL Azure with SQL Azure. Okay? Which is a very powerful feature. So you just have a service, again, running in the cloud, which is doing the synchronization stuff for us. So here I have set up synchronization, and I told you I will come back to these tables here. And these are just the helper tables that the synchronization runtime created for me in order to keep track, in order to implement the change tracking functionality for us. Okay? So this database is actually sync enabled and it's currently being synchronized each and every 5 minutes between the cloud and on-premise and between on-premise and the cloud. And the master database is configured currently the cloud database. Okay? Scalability, yeah. We can scale in Windows Azure, no problem. That's one of its features. We can scale out. We also can scale up. Scale up means giving higher virtual machine sizes. So usually we say small size, but we can easily go large, extra large, which means higher costs, but which means also higher power and more power. So not just CPU and RAM and more cores. What is really, really important is to understand that the bigger the VM size, the bigger the network throughput. So a small size is limited in network throughput. And the largest one is also limited, but I guess it's something like 800 megabit or maybe 1,000 megabit. So it's not only the compute features and power, but also the network power. But the actual important thing is to do load adoption, so to say, by scaling out an application. So we can do this. We can do this by talking to our beloved REST-based service management interface. And this service management interface enables us to get the current configuration of an application. We suck down that, let's just run it, okay? Let's just hit F5, yeah? No, that's a Windows Azure thing. That's a Microsoft-provided thing. So what we are doing here is we try to get the current configuration from the service management API. Now we got the configuration. Let's quickly look at it. Can you remember the first days of XML when they said XML is human readable? So we can see that the instance count is 1. I just want to pump it up. And I configured this sample code to pump it up to 2. So let's go here. Let's do some link love. And if we now look at the service configuration again, we see that the instance count is now 2. And we just say, OK, go ahead into the cloud and do it. So it's uploading the new configuration. It's done. What we should now be seeing in the portal is happening something, hopefully, in just a few moments, here. So now this deployment is updating, which means the one instance that has been there is still there, the other one is being brought up. So usually that takes something like 16 minutes, so maybe we will not see it until the end of the session. Yeah. Last but not least, let's put some value add into our application up there. So I've been talking about deployment. The deployment that we have seen based on the service model, on the .csdev file, is the, let's call it the master deployment. There I specify the configuration values, the input endpoints, the protocols being used, the certificates in place, and so on and so forth. Based on that, the VM and the whole environment is built and being set up. But this should, at some point, be quite stable. What I may just want to be able to is push web applications or web services into Azure without having to redeploy a complete new instance. I can perfectly imagine to have 2 instances to fulfill the service level agreement. And inside the 2 instances, I have exact copies of, let's say, 100 websites. Multi-tenancy. Should we try this? Should we take a look at this? Yes, Christian. Okay, so let's try that. So what I have up there in the cloud is here in ThinkTecture Compute, is an application that is implemented like this. It's actually an empty web role. It's doing nothing. Nothing besides the empty on start thing. But there is something like a startup task, and this startup task is called the Blob Storage Deployment Engine. And what it is doing is it's using the idea of a web worker. I told you there are worker roles and there are web roles. But starting with Windows Azure SDK 1.3, we can have web workers, which means full IIS plus worker functionality in the background. And the cool thing is here, let's just remote desktop into it, huh? Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. No, no, no. So let's get into the machine. And here we go. What we will see is that here I have full IIS already configured with a bunch of websites. And what we also have is this, come on, where is it? This blob storage deployment engine host running in the background, which is my process. And this background process was started by a Windows Azure process called dubaiishost.exe. This is the process that the web role code runs in, and my actual website runs in IIS. So I have two physical, completely separate processes, completely isolated, which is good. Okay? So this one is executing the background stuff, like polling, huh? And the other one is just full IIS. So what happens now is, and I may take a few minutes longer today, what happens now is, let's do the following. Let's create a new website. Let's say I want to do a website for the tech days here in Den Haag. Yesterday it was Antwerp. So let's create a new project, web, ASP.NET MVC, let's call it Den Haag web. Doesn't matter where to put it. Let's put the internet application template in there. Let's customize it. So welcome to Den Haag. Is it correct like this? Yeah, should be. And let's use the other Razor template. No, that one to say my tech days. Okay, compile it. And now we are deploying this application to a local file. So publish it to file. Let's just use ctemp, the most important folder on a developer's machine. You can delete C Windows, but never ctemp. Okay? And that's a best practice. So ctemp, can't remember. Ctemp publish. Publish Den Haag site. No. Publish Den Haag site. Publishing succeeded. So now here we have the website. I'm now going to zip it up. Of course, you could also automate this completely. So now we have a site zip. Wonderful. What I'm going to do now is I create a new DNS entry. Okay? So we have, I own the domain thinkazure.net. So let's call it denhaag.thinkazure.net. And let's map it to thinktexture.cloudapp.net. Okay? So this should be now in place. Denhaag maps to thinktexture.cloudapp.net. The next thing is, by convention, we are going to rename this here. So Den Haag thinkazure.net. Den Haag thinkazure.net. Wonderful. And now cross fingers. What we are doing now is we try to deploy this into blob storage, into the sites. So how big is it? 400K. So I'm copying it into blob storage. This should now upload to blob storage. The web worker in Azure monitors blob storage, sees a new file, unzips it, unpacks it, and creates a new multi-tenant website. Are you sure this works? So, Den Haag thinkazure.net. So if we now go to remote desktop again, and I say F5 on this one, I have successfully deployed a complete web application into a multi-tenant aware cloud environment in 15 seconds. 15 seconds versus 20 minutes. If you have applications you can and want to deploy like this, and you don't need to rely on the role, on the web role, on the role entry point class to do some additional background features, then this is a very, very easy and very convenient way in order to get your apps running in Windows Azure like this. Okay. Okay, I created a web application. I created a DNS entry that maps to my cloudapp.net. And in IIS, or in the web worker role, I was monitoring blob storage for a zip file. The zip file was then loaded from blob storage, unpacked, unzipped, and the name of the zip file matches the host header in IIS. Then I created a new website just through the IIS management API, and that's it. And that's all that happened. So there is a magic in DNS, and there is a magic in Azure with blob storage, and then there is pure IIS ASP.NET deployment magic, and that's it. Oh, again, please. Exactly. If I'm going to my blob storage folder and delete all those zip files, 30 seconds later, I will have no application. And if I'm going to update it, it looks at the timestamp, and it will just delete the existing one and deploy the new one. Sounds good? It's in the pipeline. Cool. So DNS is very important. So we really need to map our own domains and our own subdomains onto existing cloudapp.net, well, applications and subdomains. Going back from the cloud to on-premise is not as easy, because usually over time you are optimizing it, you are using features that are only available in the cloud, like the web worker thingy, and yeah. I mean, going from on-premise to cloud is one thing, but maybe coming back is not as easy as we may imagine. So, yes, we are done. We are happy with an early version and an early vision of the cloud. We are in the middle of the Windows Azure platform. We have seen what you can do with Windows Azure today, some tips and some tricks and some real-world experiences with Azure Compute, Azure Storage, SQL Azure, the deployment features. So I hope that you have enjoyed this session. If you have questions, I can tell you there are a lot of questions about the cloud. Like this CIO, huh? And you can see it, he has a tie. So he says, why isn't that machine in the cloud? You know, everything needs to go to the cloud, huh? So that IT guy is a little bit confused. So the boss walks away, the IT guy is still confused, and the problem is, it's a dishwasher. So I don't think everything will go into the cloud. But in my second session, I will show you an approach how you can connect a dishwasher through the cloud. Right? Well, I'm not going to do that sample because I don't have a dishwasher with me, but the same IT ideas apply, which I'm going to present in my session on the service bus for doing remote connectivity through and with the cloud between services and service endpoints, a very, very powerful feature. So all that's left to say for me is thank you for coming, thank you for being a very interactive audience, and thank you for listening.